going on, everybody? Happy Monday. Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets, powered by FCN right here on Game Plus Network. Chris Meany here with you. Always appreciate you guys hanging out with me today, whether it's live on our FTN Network YouTube page, Game Plus Network, or listening here on iTunes or Spotify. Mean Streets available wherever it is that you listen to your favorite podcasts, and a couple other FTN Network shows headed your way over on Game Plus Network. More on that in just a little bit. We have the Welsh joining the show today. Is it the Welsh on the Twitter machine? He is a co-host over at Fantasy Pros, MLB Betting Podcast. Also, he has a podcast in this league. I've joined him a couple times. He's fantastic. He's deep into MLB prospects, which I love. It's really tough to kind of get engaged when some of these kids are just drafted. Of course, MLB draft got underway yesterday. Going to go over like the first round, first 15 picks or so, kind of dive into the first few picks, just get Welsh's thoughts on the overall draft, if Baltimore made the best selection at number one. But how could you know, right? It's a little bit different than other sports. NFL, we see some of these rookies right away. In the NHL, some of the top few picks in the NHL, we kind of see them right away. We certainly we probably will see Shane Wright at some point this season. Slafkovský, number one to the Montreal Canadiens. I don't know if we'll see him, still young. MLB though, right? It's a little different. We may not see these kids for quite some time, but it does make you feel a little bit older, right? When you see, it's the first time in MLB draft history that sons of former major leaguers went number one and number two overall. Jackson Holliday, the kid looks like he's eight, went number one overall to Baltimore. His dad, Matt Holliday, of course, we know him from the Rockies. I think with the Rockies in that run that they had years and years ago, it was like they squeaked into the playoffs, I think, via the wild card, and they won like 17 or 18 down the stretch. And I remember Holliday with a big slide at home plate. I think about that all the time. Not all the time, but it does stick with me when I hear Matt Holliday. And then Drew Jones to Arizona, number two overall, son of Andrew Jones, a pretty good center fielder in his day. Of course, I remember him from the Atlanta Braves. So we'll talk to the Welsh about that. Tonight is Home Run Derby. The All-Star Game gets underway tomorrow. Not going to see Mike Trout. He pulled out. I believe Byron Buxton is starting, and Ty France is now taking Trout's spot overall on the American League roster. We'll dive into some home run, you know, props. It has been Pete Alonso's show, event, over the past couple of years. He's won back-to-back home run derbies in 2019, and then there was no home run derby in 2020 due to the pandemic, and then last year at Coors Field, he just put on an absolute show. We do have the BRAC. We've got some odds. Albert Pujols is in it. He's a long shot to win, and he's up against Kyle Schwarber in the first round, but man, there's a lot of intriguing matchups. You know, got Ronald Acuna Jr. against Pete Alonso, and then we have, did I call Matt Olson earlier? I don't think so. Matt Olson was on my mind. He's always on my mind when I'm thinking home runs. He's not going to be there. It's Pete Alonso, and then Julio Rodriguez is going to be there. The guy is absolutely just lighting the baseball world on fire. I mentioned on Twitter just the other day that it turns out he's going to be the best, I think, as of right now. I mean, you can ask Welsh this. He's a huge baseball fan. I think that he's probably like a league winner right now. He's the best value on draft day. He's been fantastic. Guys that we've talked a lot about in this show before the season started, like Shane McClanahan. I mean, this guy was great. Max Fried. Like, these guys are, they've returned value on draft day. But Julio Rodriguez, I mean, this guy was, I tweeted that out and some people were like, I got him in the 14th and the 15th round, even high stakes leagues. This guy was not a top 8, 10 round pick. An absolute steal, five-tool player, and we're really seeing it on display already. And he's leading off for Seattle. Remember when he started to struggle against right-handed pitching to start the season? He's been great. I'm really looking forward to him tonight as well. I think he should be fantastic. Alex Galvin in the house, over 251 home runs total. That's a lot of bombs, but I quick math, like, yeah, I kind of dig that. We could see, you know, nearly 40. If it's Schwarber and Pete in the finals, we could see these guys get over 40 for sure. Just those two alone, right? And flirting with 100 combined with those two guys. But we'll talk about it all with Welsh. We have a lot really to get to on this show. We're going to continue our NFL team previews. We're sticking inside the NFC South. The New Orleans Saints are on the docket today. No Sean Payton, Jameis Winston, second year with the Saints. Michael Thomas, haven't seen him in a long, long time. They bring in Jarvis Landry. They draft Chris Olave. You know, a lot of value with the Saints. You know, from a redraft standpoint, from a best ball standpoint, you can really stack up the Saints. Jameis Winston's going pretty late in drafts. We know about his upside. So we'll talk about the Saints from a betting standpoint and a fantasy football standpoint. Today, we're looking at round 9 of NFFC leagues, high stakes leagues, looking at the ADP over the last 5 or 6 weeks. Round 9, a lot of appealing names on the list as well. Chase Edmonds, Kadarius Toney, Derek Carr, who I've talked a lot about on this show as well, I think is a strong candidate to be a QB1, a top 10 quarterback, could be a top 5 quarterback in fantasy football land this year. I truly believe that with the addition of his old buddy, Davante Adams, and some other pieces that they have, Waller and Hunter Renfrow as well on that Raiders squad. But we will look at round 9, and Leonard Fournette's in the news as well. But I wanted to start with a couple things. Congrats to Alex Blickle, who called Cam Smith to take down the Open. What a showing from him. Unbelievable stuff. I'm kind of still in awe of what he did this weekend and what he did on Sunday. I mean, a 64 on Sunday, a 64 on Friday. He had 6-1 putts yesterday. He had 12 putts in his last 9 holes. He shot a 30 on the final 9. Are you kidding me? 30? 5 birdies in a row. The putt that he had on 17, you know, when he was just in front of the bunker and he goes to the right of the bunker. I've seen guys just like putt that into the bunker on 17. You know, it's just unbelievable, right? Minus 20 is tied for the best showing ever at a major. He was second over the weekend in putting. He won the Players and the Open in the same week. That's been done before, but only, or in the same week, in the same year. It's been done before, but only one other time has it been done in the same year. And of course, Jack did that, won the Players and won the Open. And when he did it, the Open was also at St. Andrews. So this is pretty impressive stuff. Like, this guy is a triple threat. I mean, off the tee, his wedge game, and his putting. I just love the way that he gets up to the ball. There's no messing around. There's no practice swings. It's a long look into the hole, and then boom, like the guy is just, he's so darn good. And George is, yeah, hello, darkness, my old friend. I really did feel for Rory. You know, that's one thing also that Cam didn't have going for him. You know, the crowd was certainly there. There were some Aussies in the stands for sure, but the crowd was really there for Rory. And I did feel for him, man, almost a perfect day on Sunday. He hit evergreen but one. I think he was 17 for 18. I know there's massive greens at St. Andrews, but he hit evergreen. He just couldn't make a putt. He couldn't make a putt. He was 59th in putting, 34 putts. I just couldn't make one, right? Every hole was a 2-putt. He had to make one. And, you know, I really did feel for him because I think he basically had a perfect game. But when somebody has like a 64 on a Sunday and has that kind of back nine, you really just have to tip your cap to Cam Smith. But, you know, looking at Rory, I believe he had 4 majors at age 24, 25. I think he was like 4th or 5th youngest ever to have 4 majors at that time, and he hasn't had one since. He's now 33. He talked about St. Andrews being like the Holy Grail, right? You know, he wanted to win there, of course, and I believe the next time St. Andrews will be there, like the Open will be at St. Andrews, I think he'll be 40. He still has a lot of golf left, of course. He's had an unbelievable year, really. I mean, the 4 majors, he's been top 10 in all 4 majors this season, but he just couldn't hang on to that one. But congrats to Alex Blickle, who nailed it. I believe he's had 6 outright winners this year. 3 of them have been Cam Smith. We love Cam Smith on this show as well. At 28-1, we talked about him. I did, not going to lie, had the feet up, hands behind the head with both guys, Rory and Cam, and just watching them go back and forth. And then I saw that Cameron Young drove the green on 18 and quickly just like chucked a couple bucks on him because, you know, he did end up making that eagle putt. But, you know, if Cam didn't make that birdie putt, then all of a sudden, you know, you go to a playoff with those two guys. He was 75-1 when he made that, when he drove the green on 18. Then, of course, he made that eagle putt as well. But he's got to be kicking himself. There's a couple that he left out there as well. But it was a phenomenal, phenomenal showing. Bogey free. Look for it on Game Plus Network. It's a free show over at FTNnetwork.com. Alex Blickle, Matt Jones, Brian DeCorti. We've had all those guys on this show before. It is a free show, as I mentioned. And they roll through some of their favorite picks. I know the majors are open. There's still a lot of golf content to be had and a lot of bets to be won. And Boogie Free will be coming your way on Game Plus Network very, very soon. Coming your way after the commercial break, it is the Welsh. We're going to go over last night's first round in the MLB draft. We're going to talk about the Home Run Derby. May get his thoughts on who he thinks is going to win the World Series. Let's talk a little bit of baseball here on Game Plus Network. Keep her locked. Welcome back in. You're watching Mean Streets here live on Game Plus Network as well as our FCN Network YouTube page. Super thrilled to bring in Chris Welsh. Is it the Welsh on the Twitter machine? Also the host of In This League. And you can catch him over at Fantasy Pros as well. What's going on, dude?
What's up, Meanie? What's going on, brother?
Not much, man. I appreciate you jumping on here. I know it was short notice last night. I saw you and Bogman. You guys looked like you were live streaming last night, the MLB draft. Yeah. I know how in tune you are with some of these prospects. Have you seen a lot of these guys over the years? Like, just maybe not this class, but years prior, I've seen you, you know, tweet and watch your content and listen to you. And it's just always nice to have somebody that's just like, could see the talent firsthand. So we're looking forward to chopping it up with you here about that. Also want to talk about the home run derby as well, but let's talk about the draft. Let's talk about the draft. Man. You got all those baseballs behind you. Like, I mean, you got
it's quite the setup. We've got the wall here. It needs to be cleaned up a little bit. There's some hiding right up here. Yeah, people are watching on the YouTube. Yeah, there's quite the setup, my friend.
Yes, you do. You have a really good setup there. So let's talk about the draft. I said off the top, right? I mean, it makes you feel a little older. I don't know how you feel, but, you know, we've seen guys before like Vlad Guerrero Jr. and, you know, Tatis Jr. But the first time in MLB draft history that sons of former major leaguers went 1 and 2 overall, Jackson Holliday to Baltimore, Matt Holliday, of course, his old man, and then Drew Jones to Arizona, son of Andrew Jones. And then I think maybe the most shocking pick overall was Rocker at number 3. I know Texas is kind of all in, right? 500 combined on Seager, and you know, they spent a lot of money, we'll say that. They're not close, but they feel like, I think this organization, the way they've run things over the past, you know, 12 or 14 months, they're like win now. So I think, you know, that pick was kind of surprising to me, but get your thoughts on it. I thought Johnson overall to Pittsburgh to fall to 4, I think that was a bit of a gift. And then Elijah Green compares himself to Mike Trout, so if he can flirt with Trout status, I mean, he'd be all right as well. But what do you think of the top of the board?
Yeah, Elijah Green is like Harold Reynolds. Just everybody is Mike Trout or Bo Jackson in there. The good compare. Yeah, I saw there's like 12 comparisons. But the draft was fascinating. The Jackson Holliday one, you know, I thought it was actually going to come with a little bit of a slot discount, but it turns out he's going to get, look, the reports, a little over $8 million. So it was, in their eyes, the best talent. Hit tool maybe perceived a tiny bit better than Drew Jones. I suppose you could argue that. I'm fine with him. I thought it was, you know, a good, decent pick. He's a 5-tool player. I like Drew Jones better, though. I'm also a Diamondbacks fan, so I was ecstatically happy about the whole process because, you know, I don't really think there is a guy like him in the minor leagues right now. There's players, especially if I was thinking about comps before this, like if people are like, hey, what would you comp him to? You know, guys in the top 10 as far as how I value prospects and dealing with it in fantasy, just not a lot of guys like him. Maybe the closest is Riley Green. You got a guy like Corbin Carroll, who's just a bit smaller in stature. Jordan Walker, bigger, doesn't run. Robert Hassel hasn't developed the power. Andrew Jones, Drew Jones is all of those things. He is all of those things with the potential to put on a whole lot more muscle on his body. And I think it's like it's potentially like a generational type of talent. He's a guy that you can build your organization around. My two favorite picks in this, Drew Jones, obviously, and Tamar Johnson. Tamar Johnson, I had Carlos Collazo on my Prospect One podcast, who had said, you know, in his time, it's the best high school hitter that he's ever scouted. And a little bit younger still. He's under 30, but still, that's quite a marker to give. Tamar, you're probably looking at close to a 70 hit tool. Huge power, won a high school, won the home run derby contest, I believe, last year in the All-Star game. And this is a huge offensive talent. Not a lot of speed, not a lot of body projection anymore. But Drew Jones, Tamar Johnson, my absolute favorites. And the Kamar Rocker one, I'm actually not surprised coming into the draft. He was my number one of all these guys, of the pitchers, college or high school for fantasy. And Texas goes in, gets their Fandy boys back. And the rumor on the street is one of the big, big guys, really the only big guy that didn't go in the first round, Brock Porter, high school pitcher, some perceived as the number one pitcher in this draft. He's fallen. And the rumor on the street is he's going to go here today, and Texas has a deal cut with him. And if that's true, they would come out with Kamar Rocker and Brock Porter, which would be a slam dunk of a win for the Rangers. So those three really, really stood out to me, obviously.
Yeah, I was thinking of Semien when they signed. It was Semien and Seager, the $500 million combined for those two guys. They got lighter on that squad, too. It was just like 22 years old. So
The Vandy boys. I mean, teammates. That's the most amazing thing about this is you want to talk about maybe the most prolific dynamic duo of college pitchers in God knows how long was Leiter and Kumar, and they're back together. They get to be back together working. And Kumar is a huge talent, man. I think he really got thrown in that messy Mets situation. People want to just like discount him or think, oh, he's kind of a broken piece. Listen, he's got the best slider in this draft. guy can pitch perfect game. He can go deep into games, big power fastball, huge biting slider. He's going to throw that slider in any count he wants. He can throw it first strike, last, and he's got a decent changeup. Put him in, you know, that org lighter. They get to work together. I just think it's a huge, massively good fit. And they got him under slot about $2 million, which is why they're going to be able to, if they really do, I mean, this is all rumors. If they really do overslot this with Brock Porter, this is why they can do it, is because of Kumar.
Chris, we have a few, you know, listeners and viewers on this show that are like you and I mean, hardcore baseball, like they'll start to draft dynasty rookie only right away after this draft is complete. You know, in your opinion, who should be the number one overall guy? Would it be Tamar? If you had the first overall pick, would that be, or would you go with your boy Drew?
It is my guy, Drew. At InThisLeague.com, we've got a Patreon, and I do a top 500 prospect list for fantasy. Oh, wow. 500 prospects. I do it by team. I have it sort of by team, position, dynasty, all that type of stuff. And my number one that's going to get released is Drew Jones, who I have aggressively ranked high, but tomorrow's number two. So it's not Jackson Holliday. And actually, I've got Elijah Green above Holliday, which is a little bit in question. But Drew Jones and Tamar, to me, that's the top tier. Like I said, I think Drew Jones is a theoretical generational type of talent that's going to grow just, you know, probably I think 15 to 20 pounds probably in the next 12 to 18 months of muscle, which is going to exponentially push his power up. Great hit tool, great speed, great defender. This is like an organizational, like they will surround this guy. This will be the face of that team. And you're going to put him with some incredible table setters in Corbin Carroll and Alec Thomas, and Lawler is going to be there in the future. So in my investment, it is high school guys. And I know sometimes people don't want to do that in dynasty. You want to get the college players. Sure. I'm going Drew, I'm going Tamar. And if I was thinking about the future, I would be looking personally, probably at like a Kevin Parada or Brooks Lee. And then in a points league, Kumar would be probably near the top because he's going to, you know, accumulate points left and right.
I told you guys, Welsh would be all over this. I'm going to put a link inside the description of this video over to In This League, but make sure you're following Welsh on the Twitter machine. Is it the Welsh? And you get all the goods in there as well. I'm not going to lie, I kind of trip over that. Is it?
I know. That's the whole thing. It's the whole thing.
And I love it. One more thing. I have to selfishly ask you about the Halos. I mean, it's been a tough... I follow this team pretty closely. I mean, I am rocking the Montreal t-shirt, right? They moved away. I followed Vlad over to Anaheim at the time in 2004. It's been probably the most frustrating season, I think, for Halos fans, because they started off so strong and it looked like, you know, there's some optimism there, but they've been the worst team in baseball over the last 2 months. But I have to ask you about their pick, shortstop. I don't know if you know much about Zach Neto. I did like his confidence, right? All these guys got so much swagger, so much confidence in the interview. He said Passan asked him, you know, how's it going to feel potentially to play with Shohei and Mike Trout? And he said that, you know, guys in, you know, when he was playing high school and playing younger, that they used to call him Shohei because he pitches as well. And he couldn't wait to have a home run derby against Shohei to take him deep. So I just love that confidence and that swagger. But, you know, maybe settle a little bit, but whatever. He's young. He just got drafted. It's all good. What do you think of him?
Yeah. I actually love Neto. He was probably the biggest riser prior to the draft for me. You know, I go in like spurts. I don't try to be like, hey, I know 700 college players. I do my process. I go through, find the players I need to scout. I try to go 100 to 150 deep as far as what's drafted so I can translate it to first year player. So I'll go in spurts of when I'm really going and doing video research if I haven't seen guys in person. And Neto was one of those guys right at the end that I just like refell in love with. He's like a five tool guy who runs and hits for power. He's got a big front leg kick, which just gives a whole bunch of trajectory with quick hands. But, and I've noted this a couple times, we did a live stream on our Twitch, that when he gets into two strike counts, that leg kick goes away. He just plants and he's making contact. That's a really smart thing, because that leg kick, we've seen it hurt guys like Keston Hira. It's put questions into Royce Lewis long-term, as just far as like, you got to be, when you have that type of leg kick, that type of timing, yes, quick hands are going to be great, but it doesn't mean how many of these guys do you see transform their swings into being quieter swings? Right. He's got a loud swing. I do love that he has the foresight to bring it down in two strike counts. So Brooks Lee came into this as like the consensus college shortstop. There's a part of me that likes Neto over him, especially if you're going to value stolen bases, just a smaller school. But like you said, lots of confidence, really solid hit tool, definite power in there, can do a little bit of everything. And as long as it's not a competition of, you know, him playing Campbell and playing at a smaller spot, if that isn't the big highlight of he hasn't seen the right type of competition, I think he could just jump up boards. And he's one of those players. I actually have him in the first round of first year player drafts coming up. I think he can move up even higher. And I personally might move him above Brooks Lee if we get to see him answer some of the tests. And I'm out here locally in Arizona. I'm hoping he's going to come over to the Angels complex and play in complex ball for a little bit so I can go see him personally after I see Drew Jones, of course.
After you see Drew Jones, yeah. Did you get to see any of those guys personally? I mean, you will see Drew Jones, but did you get to see any of those? I mean, Neto's of at this, that small school, yeah. But any of those guys
of this, of this class, with COVID really kind of screwed up some of the stuff that came out here in Arizona recently. There's been a couple tournaments, and college baseball obviously got screwed up in the year prior. Yeah. This is one of the first few years that I hadn't gotten to get out and see a larger majority. Like, I've gone out and Torkelson, Nick Gonzalez, Bobby Witt, these are all players I tried to see at the college level when they would come out for tournaments or playing ASU. This year it really wasn't. So that's why you had to be more hyper-vigilant on all of the video that's out there. And luckily there's more video than there's ever been before. So if you find the right minds, the people that can process it, you know, we've got more than we've ever, you know, even wanted to work with. But yeah, you should be excited about Neto.
I am excited. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Looking back at some of these players that you've seen, college players, was there one that was just like, man, my goodness, like maybe the expectations, you didn't have high expectations for them. Maybe they just kind of blew you away. And then they started to like progress as a player. But like, if you're just thinking of a player or two that you watch live at a younger age, who's one of the better ones you've seen?
The two that jumped to my mind and very different. And it's funny because they're both in the Rookie of the Year race this year. The first guy that you said jumped to my mind was Spencer Torkelson. And when I saw him coming out here in ASU, he was incredible. He hit this ball. He had this book on him where people are trying to pitch him low. You know, he's got just a hole low. And obviously you're seeing it now even more. And I'm trying to remember who the pitcher was. It was New Mexico State. And they were just trying to pitch him low. He hits this ball at night, one of the coldest nights I can remember in Arizona a couple years ago. And he just crushed it over, not out of the stadium, but into the road. And it was one of the hardest balls I've ever seen. And he's a great defender. And he's really falling apart right now. And that really, really sucks. And it's one of those things that from a college standpoint, you had scouts beyond belief out there. Huge, huge power, great adjustments. Doesn't look like that same player. The other one is Bobby Witt Jr., who I actually saw at a perfect game tournament out here in 2019 before he was drafted. And I was just talking about this last night on the stream. It was one of those wild experiences where you're like, oh my God, what are these little children doing playing with this man here? Bobby was turning on balls, crushing it. He had the physicality, looked like, and he's going against kids that are like 120 pounds in this tournament, you know, 5'9", 120 pounds. And Bobby Witt is like man Bobby Witt out there. It was incredible. And then obviously he was taken by the Royals and I got to follow him around. You know, it's funny that what you say here is actually more of my turn to complex league. I see these guys at rookie level. Julio Rodriguez is a prime example. I have been with Julio since the day he's come up here and been hanging around at complex, from him being this skinny, happy kid to seeing him start to progress in some of the minor league spring training games, then interviewing him in the AFL, seeing him this past spring training. I mean, I've been there the whole time. So my progression is really weird and interesting from like the minute these guys get to complex, whether they're coming over from the draft or, you know, let's say the Dominican or something like that. Like I will see these guys progress over 4 or 5 years. And that's more of what immediately jumps. But Bobby Witt and at least Torkelson are the ones if you're looking for like draft scouting pre-team.
Even Bobby Witt, I watch him now. I'm just like so impressed with him. Yeah. He doesn't look like a kid that's just in the bigs now. And speaking of Julio, all the way up to now being in the home run derby and
the bat right here, right there,
a wild card spot. Is that the bat, Julio?
That's the black one right there. The bat. There's Bobby and there's Julio. Let's get him going.
What a 1-2 punch, dude. Hang on, if you don't mind, we're gonna break, come back. Let's talk a little bit more about Julio and the home run derby as well. Things continuing here on Game Plus Network. Keep her locked. Chris Meaney and Chris Welsh here with you, Game Plus Network, Anthem Sports and Entertainment. Thanks for taking the time to hang out with us. We're going to continue the MLB talk here. I want to talk to you about the MLB Home Run Derby. Also, something that you told me last night, which is pretty cool, you can touch on a little bit. You and Bogman going to be doing, what, a live MLB Home Run Derby style here?
Yeah.
Is that what's happening here this afternoon?
Yeah, so Bogman and I have we've been doing in this over this last month a live stream show on our twitch.tv/inthisleague Monday through Thursday 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. We have different themes we do. Monday is gaming, and Bogman and I are going to be doing each bracket. We're going to do the full home run derby. We're going to draft each bracket, the players we want to be. We're going to play each four, move on, and we're going to find a winner on our Twitch here in a little bit. It should be fun.
That should be fantastic. So who's going to go number one overall? It's going to be Pete. He's won back-to-back years here, 2019, 2020, no home run derby due to the pandemic. He won last year as well. His home run over-under prop is 38.5, but Schwarber is also at 38.5. Soto's at 33.5. We got Seager at 28.5. Julio, who we just touched on, 26.5. And then Albert Pujols at 19.5. Tyler, if you want to bring up that board one more time, just give people a little bit of a look here, what the bracket will look like. Schwarber up against Albert Pujols, Juan Soto, Jose Ramirez. You got Pete Alonso, Ronald Cunha Jr., two division rivals there. That should be a really entertaining opening round. Corey Seager and Julio Rodriguez as well. Alonso is favored. I believe he opened up around plus 280. The odds are getting shorter and shorter by the minute. Schwarber in there at plus 330. Acuna and Soto at 6-1. Rodriguez and Seager at 9-1. Jose at 16, and then Pujols the long shot there, but I think it's pretty neat. I don't know what you think about Pujols and Miggy being at the All-Star game. I think it's right. These guys should be there. I don't know how many bombs Albert will get to. I think I have the lean to the under 19.5, Welsh, but overall, what do you think about him being there tonight?
I mean, it's fun. I think the uniqueness, and they'll probably cover it like a gajillion times, is like, look at the age discrepancy of Pujols versus Julio Rodriguez. I mean, you know, Pujols could be his dad, legit, from that age perspective. And I think Pujols, one of the only player that's older than me in that. So that makes me feel a little bit better. But yeah, I would be a heavy, heavy lean on the under for Pujols. I don't have much expectations on it. I think, you know, these guys talk about how much they get worn out through this whole thing. And it's going to be a really, really tough go. You were asking me like who I would pick in our, when we do our thing, I would go Alonso, but Schwarber's my number two. I like Pete and Schwarber in the finals. If you're not being super fun and you're just thinking a big massive power here. So Pujols is fun. Not going to be my bet, even though it's 22-1, but I don't know if you noticed one of the most interesting things that's gone on is all the jump in Julio Rodriguez. Cause he did a practice round. I think it was 2 days ago. And everybody's been on chatter about this, did a 4-minute practice round, hit 37 homers in the practice round. Oh, and he had perfect timing. He was writing down information to figure out where to go. And cool. I believe earlier in the week, his number, his total number was around 18. It's over 26.5 right now. So, you know, one of the things I don't mean to jump ahead if you're going to go to it. Like, I don't know if I could bet that number, and he might be fun. I'd probably want to bet two guys, my big lean and then my, you know, my deeper dog, which would be probably a guy like Julio. One of my favorite bets on here is DK's letting you do highest EVs, and Julio's EV is, I think it's one. It moved two spots since we've been doing this. It was 109.5 before we started this. It is now 111.5. Julio's got a 115er on the year, averaging top 20 as far as total EV goes. Now I don't 100%. Now I think I still make this bet though. It's minus 110. It moved 2 points since we've been doing this. Kyle Schwarber moved one, Julio moved two. That was one of my favorite bets, but now I don't know. I don't know how much more that's going to go.
Man, I love it. I wish I jumped in on the early home run, 18.5, you said? My goodness, before that video pops, and then, everybody starts slamming. I was looking at the EV, too. DK's got some really cool stuff, guys. They got derby specials. They got finalists, of course. You could do Schwarber and Pete as a finalist matchup, plus 360. You could do Schwarber and Julio at 11-1. I think that's interesting as well. I'm with you. I think it's a longer shot at Julio at 9-1. Is certainly pretty interesting. Yeah, highest EV here. We got Albert at 107. We got Seager at 107. Julio, as you mentioned, 106.5. Soto at 111. Julio's at 111.5 as well. Ramirez is at 106.
Yeah.
And then we have Pete Alonso at 111 as well. Player to hit highest exit velocity home run. It is Ronald Acuna Jr. who's favored at plus 220. And then Julio is at 5-1. But yeah, lots of cool stuff here you can do. Derby specials, league winner. You know, National League is heavily favored here at minus 320. American League at plus 250. Over under on the total of home runs. We did have Gavin, who joined the show earlier, said one of his favorite bets was over 251.5. That's the total at minus 120.
Well, I like that.
You like that one? Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one a lot
as well.
Has that moved at all?
No, it's still currently 251.5 over at DK. It's minus 120.
Ooh, I bet that's going to move. People should get their bet in early. I bet you that's going to jump. That's going to jump a little bit here over the next couple hours.
And will the Derby distance record be broken? At 521, it's 16-1. I don't think we'll see it. This is not Coors.
I think it's minus 10,000. It's minus 10,000 for no, it won't be. So I don't think so either. Not unless the kid Cedeno with the Diamondbacks, who hit a 527 bomb the other day, 527 feet. I think it's I can't remember his first name, but Cedeno's with Arizona Diamondbacks, big hulking dude. Never seen anything like it. 527 in-game action he hit.
Wow. Tyler, do you have the World Series? I said we weren't going to do this, but if you have the World Series board, why not? Since we have Welsh and he's so in tune with the game of baseball. Anybody here pique your interest in terms of just maybe some value on the board or just straight up? Who do you think? As we're at the halfway point here, who do you like to win the World Series?
Well, okay, two things. I'm going to be lame and say probably the Dodgers at this point, especially when you sit out and you think about these Juan Soto trade rumors that are going on. I don't think it happens. Actually, our buddy PZP and I in Fantasy Pros today were talking about this, that it's like, I look at this and I go, well, you know, he thinks it's 99% at the deadline. I do not. I think it's really tough to trade Juan Soto. They've also got multiple years more of control. I think offseason might make more sense. So I don't know. But if a team were to do it, the Dodgers makes a ton of sense. Not going to trade him to the Mets. So the Dodgers are the boring one. The value one, if you wanted to, the board back up here is 22-1 on the San Diego Padres. Only reason I bring that up, if you want to get into that, is you've got Tatis Jr. coming back. Preller is going to get right on this. I think he even said the minute the draft comes down, they're going to get into trade talk. You know they're going to be aggressive in doing some stuff. It's going to be a tall task, but if you're looking for a long shot on value, look at the influx they're going to get. They've already got a potential Cy Young winner in Joe Musgrove. They've got one of the best values of closers in baseball. Bullpen, all right. Starting rotation, pretty good. Blake Snell's been good. Mm-hmm. They're going to get Tatis Jr., and you know they've still got the assets to make some wild trades out there. So that would be one if I was looking for value, 22-1 on the Padres maybe.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that. And you know what? They've been hanging around too, right? Without Tatis Jr. So, I mean, that's huge as well. And that pitching staff, I mean, I'm a big fan of that staff. And you're right, we are seeing something from Blake Snell recently. Dude, appreciate this. This is fantastic. Why don't you take the time where everyone can catch your work? Also, like, if they want to go back and watch that live MLB draft stream as well. You mentioned that you guys will be doing the Twitch Home Run Derby, I think is pretty entertaining. But why don't you take a minute to tell people where they can check you out?
Yeah, as we're doing this, we'll be doing it in like 10 or 15 minutes. Nice. I got a lot of stuff. The biggest thing I'd tell you is follow me at Is It The Welsh. That's my Twitter handle. I am all over the place. I do the co-hosting with Pisa Pia on Fantasy Pros. In This League is my main podcast where we've got our Twitch channel. We do football, baseball. We've got the twitch.tv/InThisLeague where Thursdays we do betting, we do gaming. We have this crazy thing on Wednesdays we do Is It The Wheel. That's just a fun thing to just garner more up. And then, of course, I do have Prospect One, which is my prospect podcast where you can get all Dynasty and Prospect talk. So, like I said, Twitter handle will get you all the places. Those are the podcasts. And InThisLeague.com is our Patreon where Bogman and I do crazy amount of stuff from redraft ranks on baseball, prospects. We do football ranks. We've got access to us and a whole bunch more. So go and check it out. And Meanie, it was awesome talking with you. It's always great seeing your face and talking anything with you. And I'm glad you had me on.
Oh, man, of course. Let's do this again sometime. Guys, InThisLeague is phenomenal. I'm not just saying that. I would say that if you weren't here, it's absolutely phenomenal and certainly worth your time. Appreciate it, dude. We're going to continue to talk sports, of course, in the show, but we're saying goodbye to Welsh and goodbye to the MLB talk. We're going to continue our NFL team previews. Next up, the Saints. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back in. A big shout out to the Walsh. I like that call, San Diego. I'm on Julio today. This is a Julio show. I like Schwarber on the other side of that bracket, but Julio and Schwarber at 11-1, maybe to be the finalists. It's no fun to bet on Pete. I know he's the monster and he owns this, and I'm sure he's going to be hanging around as well. But we could see an upset. We could see Ronald Acuña Jr. take him down in that opening round. We'll save the Saints talk for the next block. I actually want to bring up NFFC High Stakes Leagues Round 9. There's a lot of interesting targets here. You know, Chase Edmonds, I tweeted this out and getting some feedback from some people. There's been a lot of Chase Edmonds here. There's been some Zach Ertz. I do like Zach Ertz as a target. If you don't get one of those elite, you can kind of wait till round 8 or 9 and attack the board this way. A reminder that Hopkins is not going to be around for the first 6 weeks of the season. And Zach Ertz was a strong target for Kyler Murray when they acquired him from Philadelphia last season. I actually really like Derek Carr, honestly. For where he's going in drafts, I think he can finish. I have him as a top 10 quarterback. I think he can finish as a top 5 quarterback. I'd rather have him than Aaron Rodgers. He was top 5 in passing yards last year. Now you bring in Devontae Adams. He just didn't have the touchdowns. Darren Waller, you expect him to be healthy this year. Hunter Renfrow is going to be a mismatch in the slot. A lot of attention is going to be on Adams, and Waller's is a mismatch anyways. I mean, and the Raiders are going to be in a lot of shootouts this season, in particular inside that division. It's absolutely stacked. So I think if you leave your draft with Derek Carr as your number one quarterback, I think you're in a good spot here. You can wait it out maybe even later than round 9. His min and max is a pretty big difference over at NFFC. You can probably get him in round 10 or 11. Remember, he did have some MVP votes a few years ago when he had Crabtree and Cooper on the squad, and he's been finishing on average as around quarterback 14 anyways. Now you add a guy like Adams in there. Yes, Daily Handle, I am in on Derek Carr in that offense. Robert Woods, I think, is a pretty good target as well. I think it's a great value here. I know he's got two Tennessee Titans in here, Treylon Burks, who's, you know, not off to the best start really in camp. Some issues there, and he's a rookie wide receiver on a run for his team. I think Robert Woods, I definitely am buying the videos that I've seen of him cutting and running and pylons and just a really good wide receiver anyways. A great run blocker. He's going to be on the field a lot. I know the Titans want to run first with Derrick Henry. They don't have a lot of options there, but I think really good value here for Robert Woods. I think he's safer than Burks. Burks could have a higher ceiling, but I do like Robert Woods, man. I like where he's going. I know he's coming off a significant knee injury, and he's over 30 now. So that's why you're getting this value. But don't count out Bobby Trees. Cordarrelle Patterson, I'm just out on. I don't believe that he's going to have the same sort of season as last year. Alan Lazard, I like as a target in there. James Cook, I think, is interesting, but we all know who. Singletary is still going to be a factor in this offense, and Josh Allen likes to call his own number inside the red zone, but they did try to acquire a pass-catching back, right? J.D. McKissic, it looked like he was on the squad for a little bit. That didn't work out. He's back in Washington. They draft James Cook, so I think Cook is going to be a factor this season. It may just take a little bit. Rhamondre Stevenson, I think, is also going to be a factor. A lot going on there in New England. I do believe Damian Harris will be the lead for the Pats. He's on the last year of his deal, and it's just what New England doesn't do. They don't re-up on running backs. They may just run him into the ground, but I think Stevenson, you know, I think he's a really good candidate in dynasty and keeper leagues as well. Kirk Cousins is always valuable. He's the guy as well, right? There's some good quarterbacks in here. Carr and Cousins. Cousins finished as a top 15 quarterback last year. Everybody likes Justin Jefferson. Adam Thielen's a touchdown machine. We talked about him last week and all the touchdowns, basically a touchdown per guy over the past couple of seasons. And then also KJ Osborne, I think, is a pretty sneaky sleeper as well late in draft. So I think Kirk Cousins is okay. Before I bring up my target from this round, I do want to also mention that Melvin Gordon is a pretty good target as well. And we do have a board that we shared last week, in case you missed it, from Melvin Gordon just versus Javonte Williams. Look at these two guys. Look at how similar the numbers are from last season. The exact same amount of attempts, rushing yards per carry, just slightly more for Melvin Gordon, more red zone usage for Melvin Gordon. I will say Javonte Williams' red zone usage spiked up towards the end of the season. You know, the 3 receiving touchdowns, he was starting to get more red zone looks. It's definitely the targets favor Williams as opposed to Gordon. That is significant. You see the fantasy points per game last year, basically dead even. You see one guy going as a top 10 running back. You see another guy going as roughly RB40. I think there's terrific value in Melvin Gordon. If you don't start, you know, if you just hammer home wide receivers, and we've been talking about this a lot on this show, is maybe get yourself a bell cow back in the first round or so, first couple rounds, and then you can dive into like wide receiver, like through rounds 3 to 7, 8. And then you got a guy like Miles Sanders and you got a guy like Melvin Gordon. Gordon's not going anywhere, guys. I love Javonte Williams. I like him a lot. Dynasty leagues, it's like a top three running back for me. I think he's a stud. I think he's going slightly early. I really do. Melvin Gordon is not going anywhere. He's a veteran back that they decided to bring back again. He was an unrestricted free agent. They brought him back. I think it's probably a 60-40. I'll say that Javonte probably has 60% of the touches, but Melvin Gordon is a good pass blocker. He's got a nose for the end zone. He's a guy that's just gets double-digit touchdowns every single season, apart from his rookie season where he didn't get anything, and then he had 10 in his sophomore campaign. He's a good back. He's a good pass blocker as well, and you know it's going to be key for Russell Wilson and company to have a solid 1-2 punch out of the backfield, and that's what you got to have at this day and age in the NFL. It's very few bell cow backs like Najee Harris, Christian McCaffrey, and Jonathan Taylor. Those guys will be sprinkled in. But my target is Kadarius Toney. It's Kadarius Toney, people. This is my target. We didn't get a great sample from him last year. It was very, very small. He only played 10 games. He had a couple big games there against Dallas. He had 13 targets, 10 grabs, 189 yards. Everybody went to the waiver wire and grabbed this guy, and then it was disappointing pretty much the rest of the way. Week 11, he had 7 catches on 12 targets for 40 yards. Saquon, I believe, missed that game against Dallas. He had the big monster game against the Saints, and then we saw Kadarius get a boatload of targets in there as well. Not a high ADOT, 5.95. In fact, it was the fifth fewest in the NFL, and that's where I expected to kind of stay, right? He's a guy that's going to get a lot of work and usage in the slot. They didn't really get a whole lot last year from their wide receivers. 0 touchdowns from Tony, 0 touchdowns from Kenny Golladay, 0 touchdowns from Sterling Shepard. Actually, I think Sterling Shepard may have had 1. Darius Slayton had 2. John Ross and Dante Pettis caught in there. They really need this guy. Daboll's a really good offensive mind. I think they'll find a way to use him. Don't waste your time on Slayton or Shepard. Wando Robinson, like, it's going to take some time. I think there's value with Kadarius. I think there's value with Kenny Golladay, but I do believe Kadarius Toney will have a really, really high upside ceiling in this. I wanted to give this stat. This is from our guy Tyler, who's a big Giants guy. He said, among wide receivers with 40-plus targets, Kadarius Toney ranked number 1 in targets per route run, so 0.37. Landry behind him, AB, Cup, Devontae. Cup had 0.31. Devontae 0.31, Deontay 0.28, and then yards per route run, number 6. Again, this is minimum of 40 targets. Cup 3.22, Debo 3.16, Devontae, Jamar, Jefferson, AB, and then Kadarius Toney in there. So good stuff from our guy Tyler. I think there's a lot of good targets in round 9. We're going to talk about the New Orleans Saints here next on Mean Streets. Alex Galvin, not Gavin. It's Alex Galvin. My bad, dude. But I do like the over 251.5 home run totals. I apologize for calling you Gavin earlier. A lot going on. A lot of moving pieces here. No excuses. Let's talk about the New Orleans Saints. We were sticking inside the NFC South. Last week, we led off, of course, with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Win total at 8.5, 4-1 to win the division at 22-1 to win the conference, 45-1 to win the Super Bowl. Last year, they had 9 wins. They didn't get in. They had a costly loss to the Philadelphia Eagles. They also have a game against the Eagles this season as well. They have lost the Eagles in back-to-back years with Jalen Hurts under center, and that has cost them over the past couple seasons. In particular, it did last year to get into the playoffs. I do believe that this team is a playoff squad. I have a lot of questions about their offense. I think a lot of people do, right? We just really don't know what to expect. This is Jameis Winston in year 2 with the team. I'm sure he was plan B. I know there's rumors to try to get Deshaun Watson and other quarterbacks. They did bring in Jarvis Landry. They bring in Chris Olave with the number 11 overall pick. Just want to go over, you know, the Saints in general, right? We haven't seen Michael Thomas in quite some time, like 2020, right? He didn't play at all last year, and, you know, he doesn't look like he's ready to rock as of this point, but we're still in the middle of July. But overall, the strength of this team is their defense. According to Football Outsiders, 3rd overall in DVOA, 4th against the pass, number 1 against the rush. They allowed 19.7 points per game, the 4th fewest. The only teams allowed fewer points per game than them, Denver, New England, and Buffalo. 318 passing yards per game, the 7th fewest. 318 yards overall per game was the seventh fewest. The passing yards in the middle of the pack, but it was their run defense that was so strong. They only allowed 93 rushing yards per game, which was the fourth fewest. Number one overall in rush DVOA, as I mentioned. On the offensive side of things, they really struggled, and they played to a slow pace. It wasn't Jameis Winston of old with the Tampa Bay Bucks and just dropping back and slinging it 40, 50 times. You remember the game where they beat the Packers, I think, in week two, where Jameis threw like five touchdowns? He only had like 18 completions. He hardly threw the football. I wonder what the offense is going to look like this year. Is it going to be run heavy with Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram? Is Jameis going to be able to drop back and throw 40-plus times like he did with Tampa Bay? And then if so, we're looking at everybody in this offense with a high ceiling from a fantasy standpoint. This was their numbers overall offensively. They only averaged 21 points per game, 187 passing yards per game, which is dead last in the NFL. In the middle of the pack in rushing, 304 yards per game. Only Atlanta, Carolina, the Giants, and Houston less than 304 yards per game. They're 28th in rush DVOA. They're 18th in pass DVOA. They're 23rd in overall offensive DVOA, according to Football Outsiders. So there's some question marks, but you bring in Jarvis Landry, who's been a target machine since he's entered the league, and then you draft Chris Olave, and then you have Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. So there are some solid weapons here as we transition, Tyler, into some of their weapons and using some of the NFFC ADP here. So this is what I was talking about earlier. You can get a Saints stack in best ball over at NFFC, underdog, whatever you want to do. Like, look at the highest priced wide receiver. What's it going to cost you? Michael Thomas? Like, this guy could be a league winner. He could be a league winner at wide receiver 37. He's not a strong target of mine, but I do like where he's going. I think, you know, I will have a share or two. He could be a complete headache. If you drafted him last year, you could be like, that's it. I'm out. I'm not doing it again this year. And that's why there's a buying window created here because of this. Chris Olave at wide receiver 48. I think there's some upside there as well. You could easily stack Jameis with two or three of these wide receivers. I'm not in on Adam Trautman. I'm just not in on him. I'm just not doing it. Mark Ingram, I think, is a good pick towards the end. I'm not sure about Alvin Kamara, if he's going to get suspended or not. Some things that I hear is that he can't get suspended this year. I'm not legal. I'm not a lawyer. I just don't know. It's possible that this guy could get suspended. I think he should get suspended for some things that happened off field over the off season. But if we're talking fantasy football here, there's some value with that pick. He could be a top five running back this year, and you're getting him roughly right now, RB15, RB16. I think the Saints are super, super interesting. I believe that they're going to continue to play at a slow pace. I don't think we'll see the Jameis Winston of old, but you can stack him up, and there's some upside there, a strong ceiling for sure. Leonard Fournette's in the news. We're going to wrap up the show. We're going to pick on Lenny just a little bit here on Mean Streets. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back in one final time. So before we went live with the show, there was a report that Leonard Fournette has checked in at 260 pounds. And then I had to Google what he was last year, and he was 227. Are you kidding me? Almost 30 pounds? Wow. I don't really know what to say. Apparently coaches are ticked off in Tampa Bay. Can't say I blame them. But I've been talking a lot about Leonard Fournette on this show. So let's just bring up quickly here. We got to get out of here. But I just wanted to bring up this again, and things that I've been saying about Leonard Fournette, I still think he's an okay target. He's going to fall down draft boards now because of this. He's always been a little overweight anyways. Maybe he's got the George Z diet going on. I'm not sure. Sorry, dude. I've always said that Rashad White is a really good handcuff as well. RB45, he's going to climb up draft boards a little bit, but we have, you know, I do also want to throw Gio. Could be worth your time as well if you're drafting in deep leagues. You know, Brady is obviously a vet. He's going to want a vet back there in the backfield to protect him. It's hard for the rookie. I think White is a good target, is a good handcuff for Leonard Fournette, but I also think Giovanni Bernard should be on your short list in terms of just deeper drafts, because he's a guy that can pass protect as well and can catch a lot of balls out of the backfield, but he's not a guy that I view as like getting 15 carries. What it means ultimately, if Leonard Fournette is not healthy, is that Tom Brady is going to lead the league in passing attempts yet again. Have these Bucks on your radar. We're out of here. Julio and Schwarber are your home run derby guys tonight. Enjoy.